This meeting is now being recorded.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, and welcome to the GNSO ePDP Team Small Team A meeting taking place on the 8th of January 2019 at 1400 UTC. In the interest of time, there will be no roll call. Attendance will be taken by the Adobe Connect room. If you are only on the telephone, could you please let yourselves be known now? Thank you. Hearing no participants on the telephone. During, let me see, as a reminder, the alternate assignment must be formalized by way of a Google assignment form, linked available in the agenda pod and the meeting invite email. Statements of interest must be kept up to date. If anyone has any updates to share, please raise your hand now or speak up. Thank you. If you need assistance updating your statements of interest, please email the GNSO Secretariat. All documentation and information can be found on the ePDP Wiki space. There is a view-only Adobe Connect for non-members to follow the call, so please remember to state your names before speaking. Recordings will be circulated on the mailing list and posted on the public Wiki space shortly after the end of the call. Thank you, and over to our chair, Kurt Pritz.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for joining the call. I'm monitoring two Adobe Connect rooms, so I'll put the other one aside and pay attention where I'm supposed to pay attention. Thanks very much for coordinating and joining the meetings this way. Looks like we've done pretty well. I certainly appreciate the fact that you know, it wasn't until Friday. After the meeting on Thursday, you know, I think we all talked amongst ourselves and decided we needed to approach this review of comments in a different way. And so on Friday, we delivered this methodology for doing it. And I appreciate the thought that went into all the responses in the conversation on Monday. We're all sitting here, so we're having the meeting in this format, but the input taken very seriously. As I believe everybody's trying to find, everybody recognized the problem of the volume of the comment and the time left to review it. And so I believe everybody's trying to develop the best path forward. We'll use the best use of time we can today. I didn't postpone the meeting to review the comment. I'm so reticent to lose a meeting when time's so short. So, you know, even one meeting represents a significant percentage of the time we have left before our deadlines, which is our objective, right? Our objective is to meet the deadlines, and we're looking for the right path to do that. So the suggestion I came to you was really to multiply our efforts with multiple teams, you know, multiply our capacity. And with the idea being, of course, that in these small teams, we could tackle the so-called non-controversial comments or the non-controversial recommendations with smaller teams. But even with multiplying our efforts, I'm not sure it would be enough. And so as we think about how to go through these things, we have to find a way to confirm our hard-won concessions that led to the final report, that led to the initial report, or find some high bar that would cause us to reconsider those comments, and so we can get through the comments and then get on to the remaining issues. It can't be for me really to dictate how you weigh the public comment against the work you've done to date. You know, we have to find a way to be thoughtful and expeditious at the same time. So, as we do this, I'd ask you to do that and perhaps find a way to, preserve the way work we've done today and maybe, create a new issue for consideration or something like that. So that's sort of the introduction I have, just to say that, you know, I certainly read everybody's input, spent all day yesterday thinking about it and thinking about different approaches, deciding to go ahead with this meeting in an effort to keep things moving while understanding that not everybody supported this approach. And want to continue to talk and listen and find a way through, because even with creating small teams, I don't think that's enough. We have to be somewhat creative in our approach. But with that, no, Emily, I'm not sharing both calls simultaneously. So the other team's getting a much better speech than you're getting. With that, I just want to get into the substance. And, you know, I read through, the PCRT and the comments to these purposes and recommendations, and think we could make some headway. So I think the best way to go about this is what I did is to download the PCRT pages on my laptop for each one of these recommendations, and I hope we get through maybe four of them. And then the way we'll work this is that staff has, in addition to the PCRT, the staff has compiled for each one of the recommendations a summary of the comments. So sort of a summary of the rationale. And what we'll do is we'll take 5 minutes to read through that. So you can have your PCRT page, I hope, with you, and then the staff summary too of the comment. And then we can really go through and ask us. And actually, there's Caitlin or Andrea, there's a page that where not this email, but there's a page where we created a methodology for going through this that I don't know if you can put it up or I could read through it. You guys know what I'm talking about? You're typing. Okay, the methodology is on the notepad.
Hi, Kurt. This is Caitlin.
Yep.
The methodology appears both in the agenda pod and in the notes pod, but it might be helpful to just quickly read through it to calibrate what we're doing with the team.
Right, so there was something I said around that said, you know, we'll take, and we worked out with Gina, that will take a few minutes. Caboose, you have your hand up, so why don't you go while I find this?
Yeah, good morning, good afternoon, good evening. I don't want to take your time because we are running short of time. I think two things. I don't know whether this new method of work functions properly or not, but I hope that it functions. That means I will miss one series. I am in small group A. I cannot be in another small group. When it comes to the main meeting, I may not have any idea about the other that I have not participated, but I am in your hand. And second, you need to start to change your working method and would not stay longer than necessary on any issue and allowing the people to talk and talk and talk and talk. You should be more decisive and so on and so forth, and will be more quicker and more productive. It is not your, it is not criticizing you, but it's running short of time because of the volume of the work. It's just to help a little bit more quicker. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Caboose. So the methodology we developed is to, we're going to, display in Adobe Connect the short staff summary of the comment on that issue that summarizes what's in the PCRT. So we wanted to be really careful because anytime you summarize something, something's left out, right? So then we'll give you like 5 minutes to read through that and compare that to the PCRT to kind of get you up to speed on that issue. So there'll be 5 minutes of silence while you remove the table. And then, you know, the question for us is really which concerns merit our discussion. So in the list of issues presented either in the summary or in the PCRT, you know, what do you think we need to talk about for that specific recommendation or that specific purpose for processing registration data? You know, specifically, do any of the concerns present new information for us that we haven't discussed when we talked about it the first time? And I want to take care for us to make sure that we look at all the comments. So there's a propensity, I think, for us to discuss the comments that maybe our team or our group made. And, you know, we want to be careful, and I'll highlight comments made by others that individuals or organizations that aren't part of our group. And then we'll just launch into our discussion whether any of the concerns you guys raised that you think we need to discuss, does this warrant a change for the recommendation or purpose? And if it does, you know, what's the concern? What's the rationale provided by the commenter, and what's the proposal for addressing it? Which I think would be the edit that's recommended in the comment. And then, you know, and if we don't need a change, we might want to put on the record why we don't think we need change. So the fun goal is to get through 3, 4, or even 5 of these recommendations. Some of them, I think, are straightforward because we've picked, for these small groups, we've picked the ones that, you know, have gained mostly acceptance by the whole group. So does that make sense to everyone? I've done more talking than I usually do. Go ahead, Emily.
Much, Kurt, and thanks for suggesting and setting out the method of working. I think just for the record, I wanted to restate the contracted parties or summarize the contracted parties email that was sent last night, European time, to the small group approach. Obviously, we're all going to be working in good faith to try and make whatever process we end up adopting work, so that that goes, I hope that goes without saying, but really the concerns that we have about splitting into small groups are that it creates enormous challenges for coordinating between each of these small groups and individuals who have to represent the whole group. The fact that the topics are very interrelated means that it's, you know, we have to really keep an eye on what's going on in each of the small teams. And this further adds to the cost of participation and the time demand, which is already, of course, very heavy for each of the individual members. So I just wanted to put that marker down. I don't want to take enormous amount of time on it because I know that time is short, but I did just want to note that in this meeting. Thank you very much for giving me the microphone.
Yep, I appreciate that, Emily. And, you know, I wish after getting the email, we could have had some sort of phone call, because I think, you know, talking through it would be very helpful. So we on the side understand the concerns fully, because we don't want to do this if it's not going to work. There's a little part of me that says if it's more work for the groups, that's okay. If it's a lot more work, to the extent that it creates, it makes this process unworkable, then that's not so okay. So I appreciate the comment, and I think, well, I could talk about this for a while because I want to get into your concerns and want to talk about some of the safeguards I tried to build into this. So to avoid some of what you're talking about. But I think I'll take the rest, the other two comments, and then get into it. And maybe as we discuss substance, we can, and if we get into issues that require the rest of the team, we can figure out how best to deal with that. Margie, go ahead.
Sure. This is Margie. I just want to say that a lot of the things that Christina raised in her email really resonated with us at the BC. We have the hard time coordinating and a lot, it's just the same thing that Emily said. It seems that it's going to be hard to do this in sub teams. I mean, obviously we'll give it a try, but, I feel like we sort of jumped to this approach without really discussing it in the group. And now that we're on separate calls, it's even harder to go back from it. But, I just want to say it is very hard to coordinate. And today, I'm still very unprepared for today's conversation.
Thanks, Margie. Go ahead, Alan.
Thank you. I guess I have something similar to say. What we're talking about now right now is doing it right now is going to be really difficult and making it productive even more so. The contract to parties proposal, however, talked about how we would do this on an ongoing basis, you know, with things happening between the Tuesdays and the Thursdays. Somehow I'm missing something because I thought we're doing this in preparation for the face-to-face, which is next week. So we don't have lots of Tuesdays and Thursdays. We have two meetings. We've now used up 20 minutes of this one on a meta discussion. I think we need to get into the work and either have it fail or work. But I would appreciate a pointer to where the small summaries are because we really need to be able to pull the documents up quickly. Email, I apologize for having missed it. But that would be useful. Thank you.
Thanks. The summaries haven't been mailed out. They're really short, and we're going to put them up in the room. But I'm wondering, Caitlin, if we can send the summaries out to everyone.
Screen space is really tight, and reading things in Adobe Connect is difficult.
Yeah. So last time we talked about, in the agenda, there's purpose one, and we talked about that last time, so I'd rather get into recommendation 15 first. So if you can go to your PCRT and, pull that page up, and if you could put the summary, for recommendation 15 having to do with UDRP, and, I, in my laptop have
Emily, this is Caitlin. The PCRT stands for the Public Comment Review Tool. And those are the individual pages where you will find all of the comments on a particular purpose or recommendation housed. They're on our wiki. You can put it in the link in a moment.
That's the link to the PCRT. And then if you scroll down in that, you'll get to the recommendation 15. And I usually copy the link. I'm not sure this link would work. So this recommendation 15, if you read the purpose, you know, the EPDP team recommends that the new policies on new utility registration data, the requirements of the temporary specification are maintained in relation to URS and UDRP until such time as they are superseded by a recommendation from the RPM group or any other PDP. And so what I'd ask you to do is just take a few minutes and read the concerns that are listed on this page. So it's about 100 words or so. And then similarly, if you want, you can look at the PDF of the input on the PCRT that's in that link for recommendation 15. So is that clear to everyone? So rather than just start talking, we could only give you 5 minutes to look at that. So if you do so, I'll be back to you in 4 minutes and 40 seconds. Now, if everyone's if everybody's read through that summary and had looked at the PCRT earlier or looked at it now, you'd see that there was, you know, support for this recommendation essentially across the board, but that there were edits provided. Some provided clarity, some provided additional ways to provide data from the registrar in the case where a UDRP was filed. So I'd like to hear from anyone that would like to discuss certain points of this, with the idea that we might make a change or recommend a change in response to this recommendation. Alan, go ahead, please.
Thanks, Kurt. Just Alan Woods for the record. I think we should stick to probably the first and easiest way to look at this would be the ones that I think, or perhaps we might get some agreement, that are no-brainers. And personally, I think the two comments that came from the URS providers, Beth Halovic and the other one, Rene Forthfossum, both of these are coming from people who day-to-day function with the URF and the UDRP, and there was nothing within the amendment that I was reading that made me go, oh, no, I don't agree with that at all. I think they were very practical. I think they were very pragmatic, and they got to the very basis specifics of, you know, the day-to-day running of the URF. So I think from a point of view, I think these two are perhaps ones that we should look to incorporating the comments and make the changes suggested. Obviously, you can go through specifics, but I think from my point of view, I don't really have a huge issue with either 9 or 10. I think it's within the thing.
Thanks. So let's Caitlin, let's memorialize these and then figure out the best way to go through them. Alan?
Thank you very much. This is not one that the ALAC commented on, so I'm not pushing a position. I'm reasonably sympathetic with the claims that the URS and UDRP have been made far more difficult and perhaps have been broken significantly because of the inability of looking for patterns and proving patterns or seeing whether one can demonstrate reasonable use or not. On the other hand, we are not in a position to do a rewrite and a revision of these processes, either both because of time and because you can't change those kind of processes in detail without a very thorough review and understanding of, you know, the second order effects and all of those things. So my question to the people who are saying that it's broken and we can't go forward without the EPDP saying something. Is there something, anything we can do to, you know, without substantially changing the process, make it somewhat more useful within our scope, and then have the rights protection PDPs look at it in detail and see if we need to rewrite them with great care, factoring in the new world we're looking at. So is there some level of relief we can get without going into too much detail that would help? Because we can't really fix the problem within our scope. Thank you.
Is another way to put this, or should we give better direction in this recommendation to the RPM PDP group? I don't know if that's in line
Kurt,
with what you were thinking, Alan.
Kurt, unless we're going to say form an EPDP on rights protection mechanisms, which I don't think we can do and don't think we would want to even contemplate, that's going to be a long process. Is there some relief we can get to carry them through until that process completes, which will probably be a year or two from now, at best? Thank you.
Thanks. Go ahead, Margie.
Sure, this is Margie. Yes, I mean, I guess I thought we were asking the question as to whether something merited more discussion, and I think the one that Alan pointed out is one that we merit more discussion. It's, you know, pointed out by the many commenters on this that the, you know, these processes are broken, and to answer Alan's question, certainly to be able, this is an access issue. It's not a rights protection mechanism issue, and access for the purposes of the dispute resolution process is what we're talking about, which is why it's a DPDP issue. So anyway, I don't think we need to argue it now, but I mean, the question is this something that merits further discussion? And in our view, it does.
The host has left the meeting to speak with meeting support and will rejoin soon.
That's not me. I'm still here. Thank you, Margie. Go ahead, Diane.
Great. Keep Margie further. I think she's indicating the DC IPC comment that was submitted in relation to providing more data than is allowed now under the temporary spec, because in fact, being that this is an ICANN purpose, and this information that would be allowed to further enable the problem that's happening with the lack of information and the need for John Doe disputes is really not allowing that purpose to function properly. So the DC IPC comment that was put forth would simply be to provide a list of domain registered to that particular registered name holder, which is in fact public information, and therefore could be a direction to either the RPM group, or while the process is being reviewed, could be put into effect without there being a concern of the data being revealed improperly. So that's the discussion that needs to be taken further that Murphy's indicating, and that is certainly an important point that we continue to support.
Thanks. So let's take the easier one, and well, I'm not so sure it's easier, but let's go to Alan's statement first. And if you have your PCRTs available, I think they're, what were they, comments 9 and 10?
That's correct, yeah.
And comment 9 is rather long.
So, Kurt, maybe I'll jump in. That is actually one of the comments. Let me start with the Doe complaint, because that was the easier of the two.
Right.
So I actually, when I was in Barcelona, had a conversation with Yvette about this. I didn't know it would end up in an actual comment. So it's good to know that Doe complaint itself has no meaning in Italian or Spanish. They have no idea what it meant, and they couldn't figure it out at all. So they just wanted basically to change the term Doe complaint to a complaint against an unidentified respondent, because it just makes more sense. So that one to me is a no-brainer. If we're making it more universal in its language, then I can't see anybody having to do with that. I mean, unless, of course, somebody wants to say whether or not a complaint against an unidentified respondent is sufficiently, you know, is the wording good enough there, but, you know, that's a small thing. So the main one, however, and that is the change of examiner to provider. I mean, it's hard to actually explain it more in the sense of it is a procedural matter that has been raised by both the URA providers in this. So we've got both the NAS and the MFSC who are saying that it would make so much more sense for them if the wording examiner was replaced with provider, because the examiner itself in practice would not be the person who updates the claim. It would be the provider who would update the claim. And again, to me, that's something that it just seems procedural, and we're paying heed to what they are saying. So, I I mean, I think we can all read what they're saying there, but they're the general colors of them, as far as I remember from my reading of it.
Mm-hmm. So these are the two changes that Alan discussed. So let's try to settle that. So I think those two changes make a lot of sense to me, in that they, the first one makes the language universal, and the second is sort of the more correct term of art, that we're talking about providers and not examiners. So does anyone have an issue with those two proposed changes? And then, so thanks very much, everyone. And then for the second set of issues, I remember that we discussed this at the process by which, I'll still call them DOE complaints, but registration data might be released either before or after the complaint was made, and we did not get to being specific about how additional data was released. I think, as I recall, and I don't have much of memory left, but as I recall, they were for the sort of reasons that Alan described, that it would be a complicated process to release data beforehand, that it was essentially, as Margie said, it's essentially an access discussion, and to get access to the data prior to the UDRP complaint being filed, and then information released after the complaint is filed about other registrations and the sort of that sort of data disclosure led to complexities too. So I think we discussed that before and decided to leave it alone. So I don't know if we have a suggestion about how we could approach that here.
Hi, pardon the interruption. This is Christy, the operator. And Andrea, I wasn't able to get them joined. Every time they tried to dial their number, they said it was busy in the room.
Okay, thank you, Christy. Okay. Thank you for trying.
All right. You're welcome.
That was for Kavu. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, it's Emily. But thanks. I think it's safe now to talk. Yeah, I agree with you, Kurt. I think that by getting into the fascinating areas of when and how much data disclose at this point, we are kind of straying into access issues. So it's probably best to park that for now. I do think, though, just to flag it, that reverse, who is type of service, would not be appropriate, because it isn't actually definitive about whether or not a domain name is an abusive registration. All of the providers publish their previous decisions, and so once the identity of the registrant is known, or a proxy is lifted in the old money, then it's a fairly straightforward matter to look up previous cases involving the same party. And that's actually much stronger evidence and much carries much more weight with the panelists than just say rattling off how many registrations someone has. There's nothing bad in having lots of registrations, and it doesn't mean that they are abusive. I can immediately see lots of hands are up. I probably shouldn't have started this, but I actually wanted to take the microphone to agree with you, Kurt, that this is straying into access issues. It's sort of out of scope for us right now. So I'll leave it there.
Yeah, let's see what the responses are. Go ahead, Alan.
Thank you very much. On Emily's comment, my recollection is that providers at times redact the information that they publish. So the information on who the real registrant is not always there. Sometimes it is, sometimes it isn't. It dawns on me that this is an access issue, but when we talk about the access, it may well be that to facilitate the kind of access which you think at that point is reasonable, and since the URS providers will be under contract with us, I believe that's another requirement we have somewhere, we can provide them with some more general access than the public gets and feel sure that it's not going to be used improperly. We may need, once we establish what a reasonable access is, we may need it within our PDP to tweak some rules in the URS or UDRP to allow that access to go forward, because it isn't provided for in that policy. So maybe if we put a placeholder saying when we talk about the access, we may have to come back and make some minor modifications to the UDRP and URS, we can dispatch it at this point.
The host has left the meeting to speak with meeting
later.
Support and will rejoin soon.
I was finished.
I guess so. So that's thoughtful and helpful, and so I'm not gonna comment. Let's go ahead, Margie.
I'm fine with deferring the conversation for access because it is an access issue, and we haven't gotten to that point. So that's my suggestion is let's use it as a means of pushing it into that discussion.
Okay, great. Thanks very much. Farzi? Farzaneh?
Hi. Farzaneh speaking. So I just, looking at this comment, I can see that it's been said that we suggest this approach be further considered within the EPDP and or the RPM review, which I think is the right venue to go to discuss this problem rather than EPD grants. And seems like that I don't know, Margie and others can from IPC and BC can tell us, but it seems like this is something that they are flagging, and it's not, and I think that it's also a matter of disclosure that if EPDP wants, they can discuss it in the access discussion. But I don't think that here at APDP at this stage we need to consider that.
Yes, thanks. Thanks very much for that. So, Caitlin, is there a way to not just in the meeting notes, but in our future agenda, a way to flag where we're going to discuss this? I think it was suggested when we get to. By Alan, when we get to reasonable access, but certainly then put a note for our, we want to form some sort of note for our report that indicates that this is in the access discussion, this is an area of specific concern and that it must be addressed. So while you think about that, Alan, go ahead. Alan Woods.
Thanks, Alan Woods from Backward. This was obviously one of those issues that's going to be contentious, and I'm not going to shy away from such contention, but I completely agree with the general concept that Emily was saying there. I do think that this is, from the very beginning, something that is completely actually, it's just out of the scope for us at all. And Alan kind of goes, actually, hammering is home for me that this is completely out of scope. Because again, what you're suggesting here is maybe we should tweak the process to make things easier for people who are making their claim, because they want to see if there's a similar fact evidence basically out there of has this registrant other registration. That is the change in the process, whether or not we want to make the process easier. We have a process, and the only thing we should be changing at the moment is ensuring that that process is compliant. And we do not need to make it easier for people to make a compliance. The law is the law. We cannot change the law as part of the EPDP. That is not our job. The law tells us that we must take into account these various matters. And this particular matter is saying that should we be giving a reverse who would look up effectively? And the answer to that is simply no. Emily's point then was a middle ground, which again goes into something which is much more about a process-driven change that is necessary from an RTM, but not from an EPDP point of view. And I completely agree with her. It's not only the better evidence to provide, that is the evidence of past wrongdoing, where there has been a decision that says we have decided based on the fact that this is a bad registration that is connected to this registrant. That is a much more benefit, which is giving a list of registrants who also, by the way, incidentally have the same name or maybe not have the same name. I mean, there's so many variable things in that is, this is a process issue. It has nothing to do with, even down the end of it, you know, it's not even an access issue as far as I'm concerned, because if it comes down to an access discussion, well then, you know, we're just coming back to that point of the decision to disclose or not is based up to the individual registry or registry operator based on the actual request itself and the merits of that request. And I'm still never going to be convinced that a blanket reverse who is of a particular domain is going to be valid unless there is very strong evidence such as otherwise. So, I mean, from our point of view, this is not about the EPDP. The EPDP, let's focus again on what we need to do here, and that is to see whether or not the policy as it is currently written is compliant or not. If it is compliant, we move forward and we suggest recommendations to fix the process, make it easier. That is a completely different thing that we're doing here. We need to be clear on what our goal is, and our goal is simply compliance with data protection, and we're going several steps too far in order to come. So I'd be very strongly against any suggestion of that, and I don't even think it's a part of the issue. I think it's just not right.
I think the orchestra played you off, Alan. Thanks for your comment. Margie, do you have a response to that or a different?
Yeah, I have a response to that. I don't understand what we're doing here. I thought we were going to pick out issues to pick the bigger three, and this, I thought, was something we were going to talk about. If we're going to talk about it substantively, I completely disagree with Alan. The UDRP is part of proving a UDRP to show how a registrant has been misusing domain names with regards to trademarks. That is, you know, looking at more than one domain name is legal. It's compliant with GDPR. There's no reason to think it isn't. And so the fact that the UDRP and URS doesn't work now is actually a huge problem for ICANN and for the industry. And it's not that complicated to have a fix for this solution. We can certainly talk about it, but I'll give you one example. All we're talking about is making a request for unveiling the information for a particular domain name that has a trademark in it. So if you think of, you know, Instagram as an example, if it's Instagramsupport.com or something, and it's, you know, and we know it's not a Facebook name, we submit that to the UDR. We submit that to the registrar, saying we're going to exercise our rights. The registrar provides the information through the access vehicle that we'll develop after, you know, we get to the next phase of our work. Now, in terms of the multiple lookup, we could also say Instagram.com, and now we may not know, for example, who the registrants are for other domain names at that registrar, but we can certainly say these are the domain names that we suspect are related, if they are, we get that back. So it's just multiple lookups. That's what we're talking about here. And so it's an access issue that can be solved. It's not out of scope. It's part of our scope to fix broken policies because of the changes in the who is spec. And so what I thought we were going to do is have this conversation with the larger group rather than kill it before it gets to the larger group. If we're going to kill it, I have an extreme objection to that because I think this process isn't working the way it was described. When we talked about it on the list, the point of these small teams were to resolve issues that could be quickly, like the two wording changes we discussed prior, and anything more complicated goes to the larger group. So I'd like us to stick to that plan if that's indeed what the plan was.
Thanks, Margie. So let me state where I thought we were, and I want to hear specifically from you back, I think that's okay. So we're going to make the two small changes from the providers. And then for this discussion and the effects of GDPR on UDRP, we are going, when we talk about reasonable access in our discussion and when we talk about an access model in the second phase of our work, we are going to put notes in there right now, and maybe and Matt, you're welcome to comment, but we're going to and maybe Caitlin can tell us how that would work, but we're going to have that discussion to the appropriate extent at that time. So there may be part of this discussion we have as part of this phase one work. You know, I'm of the opinion that most of it is about access and how this is built into this sort of information is built into the access model, and have that discussion at that point. So I think that what we're recommending as a small group is to make these small changes to recommendation 15, and then have this discussion about these other items that were raised by various members with, you know, that raised the issue that as far as an seem to point out for that were for discussion somewhere, and make sure those discussions happen to the appropriate level as part of this EPDP, and then the appropriate level as far as the access discussion goes, which is phase two. Is that correct? And I'll look at, well, I asked that question. Alan, is that a new hand or an old hand?
Sorry, old hand.
Kurt, this is Caitlin. If I can quickly chime in for a moment. I just wanted to explain to the group how I'm going to be preserving our discussions and see if it's okay with all of the EPDP team members and you. So as a few people have pointed out in the chat, the discussion is indeed to look at the concerns listed on the table as well as the concerns in the public comment review tool and flag any issue that we might be able to propose an outcome as a small team. So for example, with the changes provided from the URF and UDRP providers, it seems that no one objected to posing those changes to the full EPDP team for review. So that's a tentative outcome for this group. Excuse me. And then my plan, if anyone suggests that there is an access issue being discussed and it should be reserved for phase two of our work and or brought to another working group's attention, is I will flag those issues. Note what the discussion was within the small team, and of course that would be another tentative outcome that would be brought to the full EPDP team. So if I understand correctly, the issues that were marked in 3, 5, 8, and 11 regarding UDRP and URS access to registration information is this team seems to be converging that that's not an appropriate discussion for phase one of the EPDP team's work, but in phase two, when we go to access, it will be brought to that discussion, at which point the team could decide this might be a more appropriate discussion for the RPM's working group, it might be out of scope for this team, or it might be the appropriate time to discuss now. But that decision isn't being made now. If I misstated anything or anyone has any comments, please feel free to chime in and we can edit the tentative outcomes this group is converging on. Back over to you.
So, Matt, I see your hands up. I'll ask you if you agree with Caitlin's assessment.
Yeah, thanks, Kurt. This is Matt speaking for the record. I do, appreciate what Caitlin outlined and B, agree with it. So thank you for that. I do think that clearly the points that you just went through are part of the access discussion. So I think we, as a small group, can agree that those get kicked down the road. To Georgios's point, it would be good to just understand when we think we'll have that access discussion. So maybe we can just spend a minute kind of brainstorming about that. But the other thing I also want to just point out to Margie's comment, and while I understand and have benefited from Reverse Who Is over the years in many of my roles, let's be clear that Reverse Who Is not an ICANN policy, never was an ICANN policy. So when we're talking about ICANN policies, we need to be mindful that we're talking about UDRP and URS and the ability of rights holders to enforce their rights, which we acknowledge and should be talking about. The question of Reverse Who Is, as it's pointed out in the comments, is not an ICANN policy. And so I fully agree with what Ben put in the chat. That's a new feature that we may full well all agree is outside of the scope of what we're doing here. Because to Alan's point, we need to be very focused on what it is we're trying to accomplish. And Reverse Who Is certainly is not an existing ICANN policy. Thanks.
Thanks very much, Matt. And to get to Sir Georgios' question, I don't know if part of this discussion will occur when we get back and review the comments on reasonable access or when we discuss reasonable access that's part of the temporary specification and where we have a specific recommendation. I know for sure that when we discuss the access model, which will start, you know, immediately on the issuance of our final report, I think, we'll have that discussion then. And then, you know, it's my opinion that reverse lookups are a solution, but I think, you know, I think we need to start with the problem and then see how to solve the problem. And I think it's better to have the discussion in that order rather than say that reverse lookups, you know, admittedly are a new service that I'm just reading this. So would be a brand new service. So are we okay with the statement as Caitlin read it? And I think, you know, when we say okay in this meeting, thinking this through and especially thinking about the discussion we had at the very start of the meeting, I think okay means that we'll publish that in the notes as a preliminary finding of this group. And that's where, you know, I think we could, you know, if necessary, we can even talk about these issues in the Thursday meeting after you've had your group meetings. So my proposal would be, to the extent you can recall Caitlin's fairly eloquent description of where we are, we'll stick a pin on that and go on to the next issue. Any objections to that? Okay, thanks. Let's go on to recommendation 18, which is data processing agreements with dispute resolution providers. And I don't know if there's any cognoscenti in the room, but I wonder if we talk about this and escrow providers at the same time or not. But let's look at recommendation 18. So if you would, go through these comments, and then you might look at your PCRT2 on that. So I'll be back to you in 4 minutes and 40 seconds. So I think that, let me make sure I'm off mute because I'm not looking at the page. Yep. So to, you know, I don't know if it's my role to meet. There are two major comments here. One was about eliminating the clause here that at the end, as this will affect the ability to have publicly available decisions. While this is a recognized benefit and requirement of this, you know, it was thought by some that it wasn't a legal necessity to be part of this recommendation. And then another one was Leap of Faith suggested, you know, eliminating this recommendation, but that seemed to be based on elimination of URS and UDRP. The others I thought were in support and mostly comments about how this this requirement needed to be extended to other areas of ICANN interaction with service providers. But so go ahead, Emil. The question is, do these concerns rise to the level that we should have a discussion about them? Go ahead.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Kurt, and thanks for your summary. It's quite an interesting sort of cross-stakeholder thread in the comments about the requirements of open justice or open, somebody calls it an open court principle. So once we get to the stage of a decision, the information relating to the registrant is part and parcel of that decision. However, I think, you know, harking back to our discussions on the previous issue, a lot of these, you know, to the extent that there are comments relating to access, I think we've already disposed of those by saying we're going to get to that after we've done the gating questions. And to the extent that we would be effectively writing into or amending URS or UDRP procedures, again, that's not really our job. But I did want to just flag, and it's something I said in the plenary session the other day, that where you've got the different stakeholder groups from, if you like, the different different sides of the divide on who is, both saying the same thing, that's quite quite compelling. Thank you.
Are there, if I heard Emily right, and it's always important to check on this. So I didn't hear that any of the comments rose to the level that we should discuss them. So to me, that means we would leave this essentially intact. Please go ahead, Margie. Thank you.
I'm sorry. Sure, this is Margie. I think that we should talk about the issue of raised by the forum and George Kirikos about the decision. I think the points made by the forum and by George Kirikos are important to recognize and talk about, that decision for UDRP spaces be public. And that's something that we haven't talked about before.
And is that, thanks for doing that. It's really interesting that George probably wants the information public for exactly the opposite reasons that you do, but I agree that that's an important issue. And I think that despite the comment that we might do without that last clause, I think in explaining what we're doing here to, like, the Data Protection Board is explaining to them our purposes for processing data and Even as the comment that said, you know, we might take out this clause that it has an effect on the ability to have publicly available decisions. This is where we're telling the Data Privacy Board that that's why our policy and the procedures that emanate from it. The data retention period must be specifically addressed for this reason. So I think that I think that we're addressing that adequately with that clause. But I really appreciate you bringing this up, and I think it is important to talk about. President?
Thank you. Farzan speaking. Sorry, I'm a little bit confused. If you have the data processing agreement between ICANN and UDRP vendors, does that necessarily mean that the decision is not going to be public or the sensitive personal information of the domain name registrant or in general also like other like sensitive data that is in the decision? So if I think that we cannot, we have to look at GDPR and see if it's like compliant with, if we have, because if we can like still publish these decisions with the sensitive information and personal information in them, I don't think it's a matter of now, it's a matter of law really. Of course, I don't think it would be like redacted sensitive data, from the decision. So, I just need a clarification on this. I don't know why George is concerned that the decision won't be public.
Thanks very much for your comment. And rather than me talk, you know, we might get an answer to this. I think we have to take care about over complicating this, but well, given the comments of George and others, full due. Alan, go ahead. Alan Wood.
Thank you. And I know that my microphone is a bit choppy, so apologies about that. I hope you can understand. So I think the biggest question that we need to look at, and just following on from what Farzan was saying there, who are we trying to deal with this, because this, as far as I can see, the duplication of a decision is that of the URS provider. It is outside of the scope of what we're talking about here, because we do not, I mean, so registries and registrars, we don't have a contact in any way with the URS provider. What they do with the data that goes to them is nothing. What we need to figure out more is, you know, as to why we are providing the data to the URS provider in the first place, and whether or not there are safeguards in place as to how we'll deal with that data and process that data themselves. So in these questions by both George and the forum, and in fact, even the two cows, I'm going to give an answer by two cows probably by this, but, you know, we're missing a key concept, and that is, you know, who is the actual controller in this one? And in this instance, it is a decision of the URS provider whether or not they publish or not. And it would be I don't think that would be at a community level type direction. I think that's just a matter of the contract between ICANN and the URS provider. And we would, you know, I don't think where we have a local standby in effect to be discussing this particular issue. If it is up to the URS provider at the end of the day to publish or not. So what I would say as well is, I'm just on the 2000 point, he says that, you know, there should be a DPA between the between the contracted parties and the URS provider. Well, we don't have a contract in place, so it's very hard to have an actual DPA in place between those parties as well. So, you know, I think we're missing the wood for the trees here. I think we're going a little bit too far. I don't think this is I think where it is fine. I think they're just adding complications that are not in our scope. And I think that the way it is actually done is probably more than enough.
Thanks very much, Alan. Alan Greenberg?
Yeah, thank you. I guess I'm getting more confused as the conversation goes on. As Alan Woods just mentioned, it's not clear to me that if contracted parties are supposed to be providing data to providers, maybe there does need to be another couple of thousand agreements made between the contracted parties and the providers, which is clearly untenable. Otherwise, I'm not quite sure the basis under which they do that. But I think we need to figure out a way of doing it without several thousand more agreements that would have to be written. I originally put my hand up to ask, when we're talking about retention and, you know, if we publish a report, you know, my understanding was that things like court decisions or newspapers or what do not automatically have to delete data about someone that was published just because a year has passed or something. And I would have thought these reports fall into that category, that once something is published, it is published, perhaps subject to the right to be forgotten on a specific case-by-case basis. But all the reports you publish don't have to be deleted and newspapers erased and equivalent because of GDPR, but maybe I'm misunderstanding this. Thank you.
You can't unring the bell. Thanks, Alan. Go ahead, Margie.
Sure, this is Margie. I don't think we're talking about thousands of agreements between registrars and providers. I think this is really talking about an agreement between ICANN and the providers. So I just wanted to raise that that's where this additional issue would be addressed, would be in that actual contract. I think the reason that you see it in the comments is because it looked like the only thing that needed to be covered in this agreement was the data retention period, when there's probably a lot of other things that, you know, should be in that data processing agreement.
Right, and I think that I think those two clauses at the end were added as a result of our discussion, realizing all along that the direction is for ICANN to enter into GDPR compliant agreements with these providers. So that's our primary, and so, you know, GDPR compliant is the big term, and that's all the other stuff I think you're talking about. And we asked that you know, this be discussed too. So I'm hearing that, you know, we're gonna, I think our, the finding of the small group, is that we leave this, we've discussed, the major commenters and, decided to leave this, recommendation as is, given, you know, I liked Alan Wood's comment about losing the forest for the trees. So, We could get Caitlin to say it more eloquently, but I'm going to pause for objection and say that we decided to leave this recommendation as is. So I wonder if in line with this, the next thing we might want to talk about is recommendation 6, which is data processing agreements with escrow providers. So skip over impact on other policies and go to recommendation 6 because it's a similar. Yep.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean
that. All right, Margie.
I have, with regard to recommendation 18, before we move on to that, I think that the recommendation, I guess, the whole discussion about publicly available decisions,
yeah,
you know, essentially what we're saying is it's not part of this EPDP. So my suggestion is we delete that clause in the recommendation. So you just say, which includes, amongst other things, that, you know, data retention period is specifically addressed, period, and don't even talk about the rest of that, because that seems to be out of the scope of this EPDP.
quell. Can I have a response to that? So I think that's the recommendation made by McKelly, right? And some others. No, I'm sorry. It's by the Registrar Constituency Group, or Stakeholder Group. Anybody for that? Anybody for Margie's recommendation? Come on, you guys. Anybody against it? Multiple attendees are typing. It's okay to speak up. This is a small group. Emily, go ahead, please.
Thank you, and thanks, Margie, for repeating your recommendation in the chat. I think that given that several of the public comments actually specifically go to the point about publicly available decision, I would just recommend that we leave it as it drafted at the moment. I do see the point that McKaylee and others are making, that they don't necessarily have to be linked. But given that the issue of publicly available decisions and, you know, full decisions without redactions potentially are clearly on the mind of several of the commenters, I would suggest that we leave it as drafted. Thank you.
So, Margie, could you articulate, unless you're okay with leaving it, I've got to say that, you know, I feel compelled to say whether it's there or not, I'm not sure will have a great effect on the outcome of things at the end of the day. So, Margie, if you're still for your change, could you re-articulate the reason?
Sure. Essentially, what we were saying is that publicly, the whole issue of whether decisions are public or not is not a who is issue, right? It's an issue, you know, that relates to what, you know, how do you providers do their work. And so the reason why I wanted to delete it from this is it implies that that who is has some bearing on publicly available decisions. And our recommendation should be limited to, you know, what relates to who is. And so that's why I suggested deleting that. It's not clear what we mean in our recommendation, but the clause that says, as this will affect the ability to have publicly available decisions, what does that mean? What do we mean by that? I don't understand what that means. So I thought that, you know, by deleting it, it wouldn't raise any issues. It's simply saying that I then have to enter into data processing agreements, including, you know, data retention periods, which is something that we're talking about with regard to who is.
Right. As I recall the discussion at the time, it was about that with data retention periods governed that the ability to research decisions would be, past decisions would be lost. Well, I see. Gosh, I had closed it too, so I'm trying to go back. And so I'm not looking at the chat room. I'm really sorry. So go ahead, Emily.
Thanks a lot. I'm just responding to Margie's point, although I'm really conscious of the suggestion of Matt on the chat that, you know, we're really straying outside of our remit, so I don't want to prolong the discussion. And but just on Margie's point, yes, either it is ambiguous in the way that it's worded. However, it's it seems to have been understood by several people as suggesting that there's some redaction in the in UDRP decisions of registration data, and so it does bring in a who is issue in that way. However, I don't want to kind of belabor the point. I think that we're sort of straying off topic and time is short, and we seemed to have an agreement to kind of move on to more substantive issues, which I'd support. Thank you.
Thanks. Go ahead, Alan Woods.
Thank you. I completely agree with what Emily said. I think another thing, let's look at it from this point of view. As this recommendation is, it's basically we're giving them the suggestion that, hey, you need to put these arguments, these agreements in place. And probably it would be a good idea for you to keep in mind this one specifically because it could be an issue. But it's not in our wheelhouse. We can't tell you to do it. But you should probably look at it. So I don't really think there's any major problem with that, given what the recommendation is. So I'm okay with leaving it in.
Yeah, I'm not so sure I understand the issue. That's why I asked Margie. That's why I asked you to restate it. You know, the UDRP rule requires the provider to publish the decision in full. So what's interesting is, you know, Margie's for this, and so is McKaylee. McKaylee says remove this. This will affect the ability to have publicly available decisions. So we have Margie and a significant registrar making the same comment. Go ahead, Alan.
Look, the rules currently say they must publish in full. The reality is they don't always do that. So they obviously feel there is some level of discretion involved. Clearly, the contract that ICANN writes, the agreements we're talking about, may well have to mention rules about reveal and disclosure and maybe retention, but I don't think our words have to say that. So, you know, we're saying, yes, there must be agreements. We're not setting up all the terms here. I think we can safely leave out that detail because there's been some indication that it should be omitted, and it will have to be covered by the agreement. That's not our job.
Thanks, and I see... Barzanay agrees with that. So, yep. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say Caitlin has agreed. Says I was wrong. They do have discretion to redact. Fine, so they're not in violation. It doesn't alter anything that we're talking about.
All right, and we're talking about this for a long time. Dan has a question about the word this. Oh, in the chat. All right, so I think we need to. So I'll pause and see if there's some support for Margie and Farzaneh's and McKelly Nalin's recommendation to take out the last clause. So that seems like unique bedfellows to me. So, and so that makes it somewhat somewhat compelling. So let me ask the question a different way, and we'll either I think we're to where you know, Ali, Georgios, Farzi, Margie agree to take this out. So I'm gonna pause one more time. We're gonna take the last clause out, as this will affect the ability to have publicly available decisions. So we've recommended that we're gonna modify recommendation 18 and take that last clause out. Are there any objections to that? Okay, cool. All right, so since we're talking about data processing agreements, I thought we'd go to recommendation 6, which is has to do with data escrow providers. And let's see if I can find that one easily. And so, Kaylin, would you mind putting up that that summary, and I'll pause for 4 minutes and 40 seconds. Well, 5 minutes from the time it goes up. All right, go ahead, everybody. So this is somewhat complex. You know, I think that the first part of recommendation six, there's no disagreement about, but I noted a few things in the comments when I read them. One was about the reference in the recommendation to the workbook, which is probably inappropriate, that should either contain more detail or point to something else, but not a data workbook. And then there was rewording of the second part of the recommendation by registrars that it'd be great to get an explanation from, I think. And then thirdly, there's the need to do additional data and do the analysis in the data workbook that was done by Samba. We didn't do that, go through that as a group, and the offer by the registries to help with that data analysis. So there's quite a bit there. Go ahead, Alan.
Thanks. I think you covered that there. I think obviously one of the major issues that came through from the registries was that we just felt uncomfortable with the level of the recommendation referring to those workbooks, where we still feel that we haven't gone in depth and discussed those as a group, those workbooks, those data elements. We definitely need to do that before we'd be comfortable with that recommendation. But I think it might be prudent, and I don't know if we're going with face-to-face, but maybe we could put that on, you know, the agenda for the face-to-face. It's something that we really, really need to do. And while we're all in the same room, let's get through that.
What's your, so I don't disagree. I'm just asking questions for understanding, but what is the concern? You know, the data workbooks are there, right, to be read through. So in your reading them, are you finding errors or incompleteness, or are you just concerned we're not all on the same page with the data elements that will be processed and, in this case, escrowed? So that was a question back to Alan.
I can only speak as to my own belief on this one. I'm remembering some of the discussions that we did have about this. But, I mean, I personally, I have read them, of course, but at the same time, you know, just us accepting what has been written is not good enough. We need to be literally going through the motions on this. This is what the transparency requirements of the GDPR require, that we need to show compliance, not just be compliant. And I, for one, cannot stand over the fact that these workbooks appear, they might be in a place that is good, but we need to have that discussion. We need to sit down, we need to go through it as a team, and we need to actually give some adequacy and sufficiency to our review of that. So, you know, I off the top of my head, I don't know whether or not there's anything that jumps out at me, but I know that from a process point of view, I think we're lacking, and we need to tick that box, and we need to go through and agree it as a consensus, as a team.
And so let me bug you with one more question. So is, what's a good way to do that? So I think a not good way to do that is to have 35 of us, or however many of us, sitting around the table looking at individual data elements and tracing them through. So it, you know, I hate to use the word small group, because that's become a little bit poisonous, but is there a way to empanel a group of us that like to trace data elements through its processes and through flowcharts, and sit around the table and do that sort of analysis and come back to the group? Because I think that it's a fairly objective analysis. I think the sort of a review you're talking about is necessary. So I really appreciate that. And, you know, one of the things we've done well, and one of the things we want to demonstrate to the world, is we've gone to the effort of creating these workbooks. And so now we want to, you know, in our discussions, we always stop short because of discussion exhaustion. We always stop short of doing that sort of tracing and analysis you're talking about. So, for others, I wonder if there's a way of deputizing a group to do that work and report back to us, because I think it's necessary to be thorough, but I'm not sure it's contentious. So I'll ask Alan to respond one more time and then get on.
Yeah. Sorry, Emily. I mean, I think in this issue where you're right, you know, a lot of it could be, you know, quite straightforward in a simple review and object. I think the small team would work on that because basically give people homework, divide it up properly. But I mean, there are certain elements which, of course, and certain recommendations which possibly would have a bit more contention. We can see this here specifically from the escrow one where, you know, there's certain people saying, well, there's certain elements definitely don't need that are currently escrowed at the moment, and we need to be clear on that. So they're ones that could potentially have more bones of contention within, and I think we should probably prioritize, get the easy ones out of the way first, allocate the homework ones to people so that maybe you can present at the face-to-face and say, this is our review of workbook one through whatever. And once we've gotten through the easy ones, then we can have those discussions. Still have a presentation from a small group as to, you know, the discussions that were occurring. And then specifically agree on whether or not, you know, certain elements that might be contentious were good or not, and have those discussions and hash those discussions out, in a plenary, because I think we probably do have to have those discussions. So I think we can get a lot of that through, tick those boxes, and a lot of them should be really relatively straightforward. But for those other ones, we can spend that extra time and we can hold our hands up and say, yeah, we currently discussed this and we came to a decision at the end. Ever the hopeful person I am.
Thanks very much, Alan. Go ahead, Emily.
Thank you very much. I think what I'm going to say is pretty close to what Alan was saying. And to your suggestion, Kurt, about how we deal with the actual data elements. The thing, it seems to be clear that most people agree that we should actually go through and really define which data elements are necessary and should be included, and by implication, there might be others that could be dropped. I seem to recall that we did do something close to this, or certainly we skirted around it during our last face-to-face meeting. And so there might be something to build on there. And it could just be a question of putting the elements into two buckets, one which, you know, is non-contentious to include, and then there are several others where it might be dropped. Several of the comments, you know, the point I raise my hand to make is to sort of go back to the tasks I think that we're doing in this small group is to say, well, did we learn anything new from the comment? I don't think so. I think it's fairly predictable restatement of well understood positions by the various stakeholder groups. One that comes up in the registrar's comments, which you highlighted, Kurt, is data minimization, and that, you know, that brings in the question of whether there are certain fields that are no longer really that necessary or that are duplicating others. We had quite a discussion on this in Barcelona. We didn't reach a final agreement on it as far as I can recall, but then for most of them, I don't think that people were very, very exercised about it, but I could be recalling wrong. So those who said this should probably go up to the plenary, I agree with. And to the sort of, I didn't really see much new in the public comments on this recommendation. That's my take on it anyway. Thanks.
Thanks very much, Emily. So what I've heard so far is that, you know, I won't restate Alan's points in our discussion back and forth, but to develop a methodology for, say, a group to review data elements and identify which of those need to be are sort of obviously acceptable and which ones might be for a full plenary. I think even a small group would include most or you know, for me, even all of us. There's several rewordings of numbers 2 and 3 in here, and I wonder how we should go about if we're happy with the way recommendation 6 is worded now. I think that's fine. I don't know if we need to take a deeper dive into those rewordings. Georgios, go ahead. Hey, Georgios, we can't hear you.
Georgios, this is Andrea. I see that your mic is activated, but we're not able to hear you. I will try to call out to you again so that you can speak.
Sorry for the silence. So far in recommendation 6, we have the one recommendation from Alan. Are there any other recommendations or concerns that need to be discussed? Go ahead, Margie.
Sure. If you look at the comments, it relates to what information is provided to the data escrow provider. So I think what we at the DC recommended it be, you know, all the data except for the specific TLD data.
But, and I think come out of the data mapping that that Alan Woods discussed. So I think that's what's in the, as I recall, and I haven't looked at it in a while. But I think that's what's in the workbook. But I think that's what would come out of that exercise that Alan was describing. And maybe if there's controversy about that, that would arise there. You know,
Georgios,
I wonder if
we have Georgios.
Oh, good. Go ahead, Georgios.
Yes. Can you hear me now?
Yes, I can. Thanks.
Yeah. Thanks for connecting. I wanted to say that what I see here as an issue for recommendation 6 is the fact that we didn't go through the entire, or at least we didn't agree through the data minimization exercise needed for this processing activity. I think as it stands now, recommendation six is formally okay, because it says enter into legally compliant data processing agreements. Legally compliant meaning that we have done the minimization exercise so far. So I think, and reading also the concerns in the recommendation six, I think most of the people believe that a data escrow needs to have an activity where all the data are copied to the data escrow, or the minimized data are copied. So between those two, I think if we come to the agreement of which data are necessary for this processing activity, which is in the data escrow, then I don't think there is a problem with the recommendation six. So the way forward, I believe, is to leave this for the agreement of the necessary minimized data for the data escrow, and then the recommendation can stay as is.
Thanks very much for that, Georgios. That was very clear. Any comments to that? Any responses? So I hate to do this, but where we are is this with this caveat. I think the exercise of going through the data flows is spot on. So that would be our recommendation. Our recommendation 6.1 is agreed to with everybody, and essentially recommendation 6 is agreed to by everybody. But I want to give Margie's point is well taken, and I think the BC comment on that is addressed in the exercise we're talking about. But we want to make sure of that, and then there are a number of other edits to the proposed edits to this language by different contracted parties. So I want to give you another whack at that. And I'm not sure whether this is for a plenary discussion or, you know, we make a table. And we could look at the different formulations of point two and point three and see if some improvements are theirs. And we've already recognized that one improvement needs to be made, and that is that our recommendation should not refer to a data workbook. It should refer to something else. So, Caitlin, can you kind of rephrase what I just said to see if you understood me?
Sure. Thanks, Kurt. This is Caitlin. So if I understand correctly, what we agreed to is that the team really needs to do some homework in agreeing on the data set that will ultimately be transferred to the data escrow providers. Some argue that it should be a minimum data set. Other commenters have argued it should be the full data set, but that needs to be agreed to in plenary, preferably at the face-to-face meeting. And once it has been agreed to by the plenary team, then the team can look at the language of recommendation 6 and revisit if it needs to be edited.
That is that a good result for everybody? Two and a half, Alan. Okay, great. So I don't know what pre-reading you guys have done. Caitlin has recommended that we skip down to recommendation 17, as that's related to RPMs also and our relationship with the RPM working group. So perhaps we can knock that one off. So Caitlin, if you would, Caitlin or Andrea, who's ever running this show, Caitlin, number one, number two. So because this was far down the list, I didn't read it last night, so I'll be reading two. So if we could take a look at this, I'll pause for a few minutes and be back to you. So I've read through this, but I think there might be a couple of things for our discussion. One is the WIPO, the UDRP provider, suggests that UDRP being a provider be included in this consultation, and the other comments. The other was by Sarah Bakke, who said this really isn't a policy recommendation. This is an action item. So I'd ask anybody to comment on that. I might ask Caitlin to comment on how we segregate those two things, because they're, I don't know if it's a implementation detail or what, but I'm kind of the opinion that this action item or recommendation is to coordinate our policy work with the policy work of the RPM group, and understanding the comments in the PCRT that the timing might be a little bit off. It's certainly good to have this coordination about who's doing what to who, but, you know, it's really a coordination between policy groups and not the parties such as the UDRP service, the UDRP providers that are affected by it. So those are my comments. Go ahead, Alan.
Well, my first comment was going to be, along with GoDaddy, I don't think this is a real recommendation we're making, but an action item for us to take. And number two, based on the conversations we've been having, you know, saying we're going to toss something over, various things over to these PDPs, we should have already had this. You know, it's a bit late to be saying in a few months we should find out where they are. We're already making decisions to toss things over that we don't know if they're going to be able to handle or address. So I'm not sure it needs to be a recommendation, and probably we should have done it already and should not delay till the access, because we're making decisions at this point. Thank you.
Thanks, Alan. Farzaneh?
Thanks, Kurt. I don't want to take the group's time much, but I partly agree with Alan that this is, and also others, Matt, Ben, and others that said that this is like an action item or a process, and it's not, it is not a policy recommendation. However, I do not agree that we are behind, or we should have included them from the beginning, because this is specifically about access, and we are going to talk about standardized access in phase two. So I think just like the approach would, and also consider that there are comments that by BC and WIPO, and that they ask for a representative to be included, I believe, in the EPDP, perhaps. And if that is something that we need to do, so I think that has to be addressed to the GNSO Council, and it's not something that we decide on, but it's like something for later discussion.
So I think that that last comment of yours was really good. Alan, is that an old hand or a former hand?
It was, but I'll add one more comment. Anyway, my understanding of the WIPO comment was not to be included as a member of the EPDP, but simply to be brought in as an opportunity for them to speak. Thank you.
And that might, and I think that decision might be part of that coordination group where if our group has a meeting with the RPM group, that they would find it useful in their discussion to bring in a service provider, then that call should be made at that level. So in any case, you know, Farzi's opinion or what I just said, maybe that can be left off. So if this is an action item but not a recommendation, would this maybe be appended under one of our existing recommendations? Something like that. Does anybody have an opinion on that, Caitlin, or anybody else? Can we just fold it under something else?
Kurt, this is Caitlin, and I believe I'm repeating, I think it was what Farzi said, but essentially what we could do is note that the conclusion of, or the proposed outcome of the small team is to remove this recommendation from the EP final report, but note it as a discussion item for phase two of the team's work, similar to what we did for, I believe, recommendation 20, or the one that we previously discussed.
Yeah, so I'm a little bit, so thanks for that. And Farzi, I'm sorry I missed that part of your comment. I am a little bit sensitive to what Alan said, though, about the timing of this and when we get use out of it. So we are making certain assumptions about what the RPM group is going to take on right now, and we probably want to verify those assumptions. So I'm for taking it out of the final report, memorializing it somewhere, and I still think it might be maybe under the recommendation that we discussed earlier, because we, when we discussed the recommendation earlier, we did mention the work of the RPM group. So, you know, it still needs to be in fairly bold letters. And you know, when we publish the initial or the final report, we take a snapshot of where we are and then decide how that element is to be included. All right. So, Caitlin, do you want to repeat what I just said just to make sure that everybody has the same understanding?
Thanks, Kurt. This is Caitlin. I think I understand. So the small team is agreeing that this recommendation will not be included as a specific policy recommendation within the final report. We'll flag it for phase two's work, but to preserve the language of the recommendation, perhaps we could consider including it in any reference to the EPDP team's conclusions on the UDRP and URF within the final report. Is that correct?
I think so. I'll leave a moment to add for people to ask questions. So let's memorialize that and leave that behind. Can we go to recommendation last one? So. Recommendation 22, which is one we skipped over earlier. So I'll give us 4 minutes and 40 seconds to read this. Well, you got a longer break than I anticipated because I was talking into mute for quite some time. So the significant change here that appropriate to me is to include on the list the work on the privacy proxy policy that should be included in this list. It was one request for a change from a will to a may that I didn't quite understand. So maybe somebody could help me with that, but I'm sure that may is the wrong word. And I think may is the wrong word in recommendation 22. It should be might to me. And so those are the two two recommendations I've seen as most significant. Farzaneh?
Thank you, Kurt. Farzaneh is speaking. From the comments and generally from the text, I believe that it's better to postpone this recommendation, not include it for the moment, and add it to the final final report because I'm not even sure about adding it to the final report, but we can discuss that. But at the moment, as the comments, I think correctly, I say we are not there are like differences in circumstances, and we are still evolving, and we can't have a laundry list of policies that need to be updated. And what if there are like some policies that need to be updated that are not there, or you know, there are like implications for this recommendation that we need to consider. Also, I wonder if this is like a policy recommendation. So this recommendation is saying to update these other policy recommendations. So I just suggest we postpone it and consider it for our in our final report.
Okay, Alan, go ahead, please. Alan Woods.
Sorry, I forgot to press on mute. Okay, so just I suppose on the first one that I want to talk about it is the. I think it was from Brian King. That was the recommendation X actually talking about the addition of the privacy and property service. Do you remember in the plenary, was it, oh, I don't even know, the months and months into each other. You know, this is something that we need to be very, very clear about still. I don't think we can, I think we need to bring this, I suppose, to the larger group that is a much more heavy discussion to have, because I'm still not convinced that this recommendation with regards to the registrar must in the case of the domain name registration for privacy property service reviewed, the registrar must include in the public who is in return a response to any full query. You know, that's the difference between the pseudonymization and the anonymization. And again, that is something that we really need to discuss further and look at further, because it's not as simple as the recommendation is suggesting there. So we really need to have further discussion on that. Would be my first point on that. And I can't think of my second point at the moment, so I'll come back.
So before I call on Alan, I think, you know, I think I'm missing the boat on this, because I see this recommendation as one that notes that there might be GDPR considerations for these other policies, and to ensure that they all play together, which seems to me to be a reasonable thing. And the list provided is a list of policies that might or might not be affected. So to me, it's just sort of a good housekeeping thing. So I hope, but when that happens, I'm sure to be, because I'm oversimplifying something. So I want to understand how I'm kind of missing the boat, but I thought this was a, straightforward, you know, as part of the implementation of this, make sure we're not clashing, you know, there's not a clash between what we've said and these other policies. But so I'm asking to be educated, not that I'm arguing with Alan Woods. Alan Greenberg?
Thank you very much. I think the two things. I think this recommendation must stay on the books and should be included in the final report. And number two, I don't think we can finalize the wording right now. You know, among other things, it says the tech fields will have been deleted. Well, but that's still on the list of things that were to discuss. And so we can't lock in the words. I do think it's really important that we go on the record and say the GNSO has some work to do. We're probably outlining the GNSO's work list for the next 2 years with this single recommendation, at least 2 years, probably longer, because the GNSO is not going to undertake too many PDPs in parallel. So this is a huge commitment that we're making, that we are saying we are not looking at all of the details to address the implications of GDPR, but somebody has to. And I don't think we can omit it, but I don't think we can finalize the recommendation at this point either. Thank you.
Thanks, Alan. Alan Woods, could you come back and, you know, either respond to Alan or me?
Yeah. So you're just when you were saying that, sorry, I was reading up my own notes, so I just went back and had a little look. And obviously, the recommendation versus what was in that comment don't seem to add up. So I know I completely agree. I mean, personally, I have no problem adding something to the list and saying, can we be sure that this is compatible? I perhaps we don't need to talk about it because it's just not relevant. Perhaps just to be horrible about it, but you know, this whole bringing in of this other recommendation XX is just not necessary. So, okay. Alan, Alan makes very good points. And again, I agree. We're not going to agree on a word in here on it. I think this is an important recommendation. Absolutely. So I'm not disagreeing with anything for once in my life.
All right. Thanks for that. Anybody else? You know, I don't, to address Alan's comment, and I want to be careful about doing something so serious on the fly, so I'm not advocating that, but you know, I wonder if we feel free enough to, you know, revise the last clause here, because it seems to me that, you know, this is an example of the administrative or technical contact is an example of issues where policies might clash, and we haven't made up our mind about these things yet. So, you know, why the heck even mention them here? Because it's just, you know, it's just an example. And so I wonder if we could recommend to the larger group that that part of this be eliminated. Alan Greenberg?
Yeah, I can live with that. I'm still not sure we can finalize the overall statement, but I can certainly have no problem taking those words out.
Alan Woods?
Thank you. It would, of course, be remiss of me not to point out the actual registry stakeholder group's own points on this, and I think it actually is along the same lines. But coming at us from a slightly different angle, where we're saying that, again, we haven't really sat down and discussed this. And I'm definitely going along this whole, you know, transparency and showing compliance route today, so apologies. But, you know, we do need to actually have a discussion as to what impacts are potentially there. And I think what Alan's pointing out as well, or Alan Greenberg is pointing out as well, is, you know, there's a lot of what is still involved in this. So, yeah, let's just maybe send it back and say this is a potential one, but we still have a lot more work to do on this before this becomes a final recommendation. So I just wanted to point out the registry stakeholder group's point there as well.
All right. I was just reading the registry input. Alan Greenberg? Is that a former hand?
Sorry, old hand.
Anybody else on this? This is the big finish, folks. So what's the conclusion? I think where we are is that, you know, this team discussed, removing, the clause at the end that starts with the words as a number of these. And this group discussed and generally, discussed and generally supported that. I would say this group discussed and generally supported the inclusion of PPSAI, which is the first time I ever said that acronym, the privacy proxy stuff, to the list. And then I would say that, it's probably most appropriate that we look at this recommendation, you know, very close to the end after the rest of our deliberations and assess, how specific the list needs to be and the wording of the recommendation. So I think those three things, those two, proposed changes were discussed, and I know I'm taking silence as assent, which is a bad thing, but generally agreed to those two changes for review by the plenary, and that but we understand that this recommendation needs to be reviewed right near the very end of our deliberations in order to assess its completeness and, you know, degree of specificity, however we want to put that. Yeah, so that's what I'm asking, Farzi. If you don't, I don't know which we did things you're talking about, but if you disagree with any of that, then that's where I want you to speak up. So
speak up.
Church. I'm just jumping in. Sorry, I didn't raise my hand.
Great.
That's okay. Farzi speaking. So basically I think that this recommendation is too wordy, and I think we should just like shorten it. And so we don't have to have a number of these referred to administrative technical contacts and all these kind of things, but also I think you mentioned shortening it. I am not sure whether we discussed including these other policies, such as PPSAI, to the recommendation. I think that if we like keep adding to it, I'm really unsure about like, adding to this list or even having the list. I think, we just recommend that there should be like other policies related that need to be updated in the future. And then I just let the community go and decide on that and come up with a list that needs to be reviewed. Thanks.
All right, Parsi, thanks very much, and thanks for your good recommendation, Caitlin. I'd like to memorialize in our discussion that we did discuss potentially adding PPSAI to the list. We potentially discussed, you know, taking off the list, and making it much simpler. And I also want to memorialize that, we discussed taking off this last clause. Mostly, you know, I want to memorialize the issue about PPSAI because that was in a number of comments, and I want to demonstrate that, you know, was discussed. Hi, Dan. Sorry about the bears.
Hey.
Yeah.
Hi, Dan, this is Andrea. It looks like you're talking, but we are not able to hear you. Can you try to mute and unmute your mic again?
Yeah, can you hear me now? Bert said he could hear me. Anyone else? This is Dan.
Now we can hear
yes,
you.
Yes, we can hear you.
All right, I turned the volume up. So it's unclear to me if this is supposed to be a recommendation to the genus O'Connor.
So to convene like 7 PDPs, which is how far
the Allen thing, or would this be work? Because it starts out saying, as part of implementation of these recommendations, updates are made, which I think is a dangerous kind of vague statement. Updates are made. Updates by who? So is this work for the IRT for these recommendations to make like tweaks, let's say, to the transfer policy, such as was done in the temp spec? Or is this like a recommendation to convene a whole new PDP to redo the whole transfer policy to see if any changes are needed in light of GDPR? Thanks.
So that's a great, those are great points, I think. I hate to like close this with just saying we'll talk about it at the end. I think, you know, from Alan's comment, with which I agreed, Alan Greenberg, you know, I don't think an IRT, can make changes to existing policy. And so I tend to agree with Alan Greenberg that it's work for the GNSO and that this recommendation should reflect that. So we're way out of time. So I think let's, if you would incorporate that into the notes too, Caitlin. And let's leave this. I guess we're not going to, finish this. The recommendation because it's complex, but I think, you know, in a subsequent meeting we can get closer and that we agree that, you know, it's going to be left to the end in any case. So I want to let everybody go and, provide notes in the, for the follow on discussion to this because I think, you know, this is requiring more work than I thought it would, but I think we're relatively close to getting to improved language, but memorializing the fact that we need to talk about this at the end. So I'm going to pause to see if there's any comments or questions to that. See, people are dropping off the call, which is understandable. So we'll continue discuss. We'll type up notes and illuminate next steps on the email. Thanks very much. I know. This methodology didn't meet with everybody's satisfaction, so I really anticipate the good will and good faith that was demonstrated in participating in it. And we'll talk about how we manage these meetings going forward on email. So thanks very much for your time today, and have a good day.